Excellent. Welcome. We're now on our third oral argument, which actually was already planned to be on Zoom. Oh, no last minute changes here. Marshall, do you want to call our last oral case?
Calling case 8220459, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Anthony Wayne LaPointe, Appellant.
All right. And as you both well know, Appellant has 15 minutes for argument, and then Respondent has 15, and then there's 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel, proceed when you are ready.
Good morning, everyone. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Atif Ahmed Khan. I'm the attorney for Appellant Anthony Wayne LaPointe. This is a hunch case. This is not a case supported by reasonable, articulable suspicion of drug-related activity. I want to start off with talking about the hunch. Officer Collette himself believed this was a hunch and nothing more than that. And that is shown by the evidence in this case. As shown through Officer Collette's body camera, Officer Collette released Mr. LaPointe from the scene. He is a trained police officer with appropriate training. And after speaking with Mr. LaPointe for several minutes, questioning him, asking him intrusive questions, such as whether he can search Mr. LaPointe, search his vehicle, whether Mr. LaPointe or his vehicle have anything illegal on him, and eventually running a background check on Mr. LaPointe, Officer Collette decided there is nothing here more than a hunch, and then he released Mr. LaPointe. He released Mr. LaPointe because a canine was not readily available. Appellant submits to this court that a trained officer like this would not have released Mr. LaPointe simply for that reason. If he had more than a hunch, he would not have let Mr. LaPointe go. Further,
aren't there limits on the duration of how long you can hold somebody, even if you have reasonable, articulable suspicion? So, I mean, it does. The fact he let him go, what does that do to this? You're saying that ends his inquiry?
Well, Your Honor, you're right. There are limits, and that just him letting Mr. LaPointe go supports the position that he didn't have anything more than a hunch. And when he re-sees Mr. LaPointe, when the canine was available, nothing had changed from the moment he released him to re-seizing him again. There was no justification.
Right, but he was already stopped by then.
Mr.
LaPointe was, in fact, the officer didn't stop him a second time. He was already stopped.
Right. Well, he did re-seize him again. And when you do seize someone, each intrusion, you need to have reasonable articulable suspicion to justify that expansion.
Mr. Khan, could we just speak hypothetically for a moment? What if the canine unit had been available during the first stop and the officer at this time knew that that Mr. LaPointe was on probation for a controlled substance offense? If the canine unit had gotten there before he released him, would you be making the argument that it was inappropriate for the canine to have done its search?
Yes, Your Honor, I would still be making that argument. And I would point the court to State v. Dyde for a brief analysis that is on point to this issue. State v. Dyde, Minnesota Supreme Court case 795, Northwest 2D836, 2011 case. Briefly from that case, Hansen was a passenger in Dyde's vehicle. The lead detective in that case noted prior to the traffic stop that he had probable cause to arrest Hansen for previous drug sales. The court in its analysis noted the fact that that may be true had no connection to the traffic stop done on that day involving Dyde. So since there was no connection to the probable cause for the previous drug sales and the current stop, there was reasonable articulable suspicion to expand the traffic stop based on that past. Similarly here, it's true, Officer Collette saw Mr. LaPointe was on probation and had previous contacts with officers. But similar to Died, there is no connection to his past and to what happened on that traffic stop involving Officer Collette. And for like a policy reason, I would respectfully say to the court, if you allow someone's past criminal history to justify reasonable articulable suspicion without a connection, respectfully, you are then going away from the Minnesota Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, protecting unreasonable searches and seizures without a connection being present. So yes, Your Honor, even if a dog canine was readily available in that moment, the fact that Mr. Lapointe has this criminal history that has no specifics to how it's connected to a traffic stop, I would also say that does not justify the use of a dog sniff.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Although I seem to be doing that a lot this morning. So what do we do with State v. Smith? Didn't State v. Smith more or less invalidate? I mean, it didn't in name, but in practicality, it seems like it went pretty far in saying, that prior cases like Wiegand and the Diet or case, that they're not really such great case law anymore. I mean, what do we do with State v. Smith? Because there wasn't much there, and the court still said, well, that's reasonable articulable suspicion. We're not even going to consider the ammunition sitting on the car seat, even though the officer could see it in plain sight.
Sure. Your Honor, I would say State v. Smith is one of those pivotal cases for nervousness. And it does an excellent job bringing in those cases such as Burback, Ford, and Wiegand, because we have to remember, Smith brings in these cases because nervousness is present in those other cases. It notes that. Burback, the stopping officer noted that Burback was significantly more nervous, fidgety, and talkative than a normal person who would be nervous during a traffic stop. Ford was noted to be both nervous and avoiding eye contact. Wiegand was very slow, quiet speech, nervous, shaking, and glossy eyes. Smith is distinguished from these cases, and appellant would also submit to this court, Lapointe's case is distinguished from Smith for the following reasons. Smith's behavior was more than nervousness. The court noted that Smith had quote-unquote violent shaking. Quote-unquote shaking that was, I'm sorry, the responding officer noted it was shaking, quote-unquote, that was such that worse than someone with Parkinson's disease. That shaking, Your Honor, was such that the officer had to follow up with questions to Mr. Smith of why his shaking is so violent. And it was the combination of that, the violent nature of his shaking, being asked what's going on with your shaking, and him being evasive with his response about the shaking, that the court noted, this is different from these other cases.
So an important point, I mean, I guess the pivotal point in, as we look at a lot of these cases, and particularly in Smith, is the level of deference that we're required as an appellate court to give to the district court's findings of fact on these motions to suppress. So how can we ignore the district court's findings here and reverse?
Your Honor, deference has to be given to the district court. In this case, the Court of Appeals has to correct an injustice that was done, and that is because the district court failed to apply the appropriate legal standard in this case when analyzing was a canine sniff justified. Specifically, I just want to briefly highlight the standard. It comes from State v. Wiegand, which says for stops involving a traffic infraction, if you're going to expand the traffic stop to use a canine sniff, you need to have reasonable articulable suspicion of drug-related activity.
I'm doing a lot of interrupting today, so I apologize for that. But here, I mean, the officer did know that he was on probation for a drug offense at the time, and that there were at least numerous contacts with police in the past with around drugs. So is that enough to create, or why not? What if that is not enough? And I'll also point out here, looking at the totality of the circumstances, it wasn't just a tap and slowing down on the brakes. I think the officer said that it seemed like he was going well below the speed limit. And watching to see, it was above and beyond kind of what a normal driver might do, just make sure I'm going 55 and not, a half mile over that limit. Plus the carotid artery, you could see it was, so that's the nervousness there, et cetera. So I'm taking up too much time. So my question is relates to his, if you take all of these things together, plus that he's on probation for the drug offense, does that create enough, or why not? Because your argument is that it does not. Yeah.
It does not, Your Honor. And in the totality of circumstances, these factors are not enough. And I would submit past precedent where there are similar factors to Mr. LaPointe. And in fact, I would submit that some of the cases have stronger evidence of drug-related activity that is absent from Mr. LaPointe's case. For example, and I've already highlighted some of these cases, in Burbeck, officer noted that Burbeck was significantly more nervous, fidgety, and talkative than a normal person who would be nervous during a traffic stop. There was a past connection to Mr. Hansen regarding previous drug sales, but there was no specific connection to the traffic stop that happened on that day, similar to Mr. LaPointe. The fact that he's on probation and has a past history, there is nothing in the record showing a connection from that past to what happened with Officer Klett during that traffic stop. State v. Fort. Fort was stopped. I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge Gaitis.
I just have a question, taking us off the path a little bit of what facts supported the district court's conclusion. I'm wondering if you're making an argument here that the second seizure that occurred in the case had to be supported by sort of fresh, reasonable, and articulable suspicion.
It does, Your Honor. And the reason for that is when Officer Klett approached Mr. LaPointe's vehicle, Mr. LaPointe, as we know from the video, was standing outside. Officer Klett then took actions to re-seize Mr. LaPointe. And he not only gave verbal commands, he directed Mr. LaPointe and limited his movement. He told him at first to go by the driver's side, sit. He eventually had Mr. LaPointe come out of the car. So this is a re-seizure. And the cases, State v. Askew, State v. Ford, a number of cases established that whenever you have an incremental intrusion, just like that was present in this case, you need to establish reasonable, articulable suspicion. And since a dog sniff was used in this case, that suspicion has to be of drug-related activity. And the brief point I want to highlight from the district court is while the district court cited State v. Wigand in its order, specifically page 6 of 7, it did not use the appropriate standard, quote unquote. Therefore, it was determined that a drug sniff of a vehicle stopped for a routine traffic violation by a narcotic detention dog is lawful if based upon reasonable, articulable suspicion of other criminal activity. Wigand is cited by the district court, but the appropriate standard is not used from Wigand of drug-related activity.
And sort of a secondary question related to that second stop, are you also challenging the duration of that stop?
For the second stop, Your Honor, yes, I am. It's less so than the first stop, but the second stop, the duration is also challenged just because reasonable articulable suspicion of drug-related activity has not been established. The totality of circumstances for all those factors does not establish the appropriate reasonable articulable suspicion.
And finally, are you aware of any cases where someone's anger toward the police has been equated to nervousness? In terms of, whether that's going to support a reasonable and articulable suspicion?
Not specifically, Your Honor. When I think about the confrontation argument that is submitted here, I think context is very important. Mr. LaPointe was cooperated with Officer Collette. He answered his questions. He answered questions that were unrelated to a traffic stop. He stood on the side of the road. When the second seizure happened, he went with Officer Collette. And the frustration also in context has to come from two more points. Officer Collette noted right away in the traffic stop that he's not giving Anthony LaPointe a ticket for the traffic stop. That was repeated multiple times. Despite that, Officer Collette continued to ask these invasive questions. And Mr. LaPointe noted that. He noted that he's being harassed. The officer noted that in the suppression hearing that Mr. LaPointe told him then. So this argument for confrontation, there is context to it. But the most important thing is Mr. LaPointe cooperated with Officer Collette. And if I may finish my final point.
Yes, go ahead quickly.
Thank you. It really is just a summary for the reasons of this. There's evidence that this is a hunch from Officer Collette's actions, the district court not applying the right standard in this case, the totality of circumstances when looking at that, comparing it to precedent. This is a case that the Court of Appeals must correct an injustice that was done here, vacate Mr. LaPointe's conviction and reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Khan, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Lindstrom, go ahead. Please identify yourself first.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Lindsay Lindstrom, and I represent the state of Minnesota respondent in today's matter. This court should affirm the decision below because Officer Collette had reasonable articulable suspicion of drug-related criminal activity to expand the traffic stop and conduct the canine sniff.
Is that based on his criminal history alone?
No, Your Honor, I would not submit that.
What's in this record would support that?
Your Honor, in Mr. Appellant's criminal history did include a present probationary offense for third degree sale. He also had other in-house records dealing with drug offenses and drug investigations. And the officer was able to see this when the license plate reader said who the registered owner was and automatically, as part of the stop, could look and see a standard routine to see what the driver registered owner would have for criminal history. So the officer was aware of that. Additionally, the district court placed appropriate significance on Officer Collette's specialized training in drug interdiction. He had taken numerous classes, not just on drug intoxication and on intoxication of drivers, but also on monitoring the motoring public and stopping drugs in the transport on the highways. And he was using that specialized training and his experience in monitoring that 371 corridor in what he observed on that day.
Specifically, Ms. Lindstrom, with respect to the officer approaching the car, interacting with Mr. LaPointe, and what he observed, what was present there that would have caused him to have reasonable, articulable suspicion that there might be some drugs present?
And was your question after what he observed on the road or the driving conduct? Because I believe the driving conduct is significant and distinct from what the other motoring public was doing, the appellant's vehicle moving from the left lane, slowing down, going into the right lane, the brake tapping. So when the officer hits his brakes to pull out and drive north, appellant must have been observing from the back to see he tapped his own brakes, to continue watching what the officer was doing. And this was different than all of the other cars traveling on the road.
Okay, but that wasn't the basis for the stop. The stop was the tinted windows and the exhaust.
That is correct. It wasn't the basis for the stop, but it was certainly information or observations that the officer had and kept with him when he made the stop. So in the back of his mind, he also had this additional, well, I'm monitoring motoring traffic. This is the type of vehicle behavior that would be consistent within the officer's training of transporting drugs.
Okay. Is there anything else other than that driving conduct?
When the officer approached the appellant's vehicle, I think it's very clear in the video that appellant was beyond, I think, as the district court said, that his behavior exceeded that when a regular, normal frustration or being upset with a traffic stop. It well exceeded that during the duration of the stop, that the officer would observe the nervousness, the finger tapping. He was holding his phone, and you can see in the video the finger tapping. Additionally, there was appellant immediately preventing the officer from speaking with the passenger, which is both typical in a traffic stop, but it's also a way for in drug interdiction to compare stories and find out whether there's consistencies or inconsistencies. And immediately appellant would not allow the officer to go speak with the adult passenger about the travel or whatever it was he was going to ask, thereby making the officer believe even more so that appellant was trying to prevent information that he would have found from this passenger. So some sort of criminal behavior that was being covered up.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm just going to jump right in here during this pause. Picking up with what Mr. Khan argued at the end of his argument, the officer here said several times, kind of very relatively early on in that first stop, that he was not going to write a ticket for either the tailpipe or for the tinting. And at that point, he was obligated to let him go, correct? I mean, that's the end of that, unless something new arose. And I know he was waiting around for the dog. He was waiting around for the dog, and he kept asking him about, well, I could check the tint, you know, for you. Do you want? No. I mean, he's fishing around at that point, and there's a fairly long period of time. So why didn't it just end there? He no longer had his original reason for the seizure.
And Your Honor, the state would submit that all of the reasonable suspicion had already developed for Officer Collette. And it is a tactic of law enforcement to...
Can I just stop you there? So the reasonable suspicion developed before Mr. Aguilar was asked to get out of the car. Is that what you're saying? Because he was still in the car when the officer said, you know, I'm not going to write you a ticket.
And that could be accurate. I think what I'm attempting to say is that law enforcement very routinely, when they have some information already, so Officer Collette already had the information of the criminal history and the driving behavior, it is a technique to put an individual at ease, and thus, you know, normal motoring public, typical traffic violation, their nervousness is going to come down. And that is what the officer is attempting to do. It doesn't mean that's what he was or was not going to do, but that's what he's attempting to do in providing that information.
But doesn't an officer need reasonable and articulable suspicion to do that sort of stall, you know, in the hope of getting more information?
Yes. And based on the driving conduct originally, I would submit that the officer did have reasonable suspicion to continue asking some of these questions, and the attempt to put the appellant at ease to see, you know, is this someone that's just going to calm down? He very clearly didn't calm down. He got even more, continued to increase his agitation. His response to the officer was, as the district court said, you know, above, exceeded what a typical traffic stop would be. Additionally,
after he was out of the car, though.
Correct, after he was out of the car.
Then how, Ms. Lindstrom, do you explain the expansion of this seizure to this second stop? I mean, this is somewhat unusual factually to have the officer that track this guy down. I don't know if the record reflects what distance or how much time elapsed, but this is not the typical record.
It is. And in the northern Minnesota counties, there's a lack of canine units available. And in this case, if the officer had called to inquire whether the Cass County unit was available. Cass County is very large geographically, as that was the only canine that would possibly have been available. And as soon as the officer found out incorrectly, in fact, that the canine was not available, he wasn't going to wait around. It could have been hours before the canine would have been available.
And but so my point is, so he terminated this stop.
Right. No. And immediately afterward, the actual canine handler, so dispatches who told the officer canine was unavailable, Deputy Buckhouse contacted the officer right immediately after the appellant had been released from the stop. And at that point, Officer Collette attempted to track down appellant, and appellant had left the main freeway or highway and had traveled a distance off on a back road. But
is there
it was
any authority that says without additional reasonable articulable suspicion you can just continue so long as things are improving with respect to your ability to detect issues?
I don't see any authority saying that specifically. And here, when the officer located the appellant, appellant was not still driving. He didn't stop the vehicle. I'm certainly not arguing that a seizure didn't occur, but the vehicle was already stopped. It was on a dead-end road well away from any gas stations. And the officer already had the information he had. It was within 10 to 20 minutes that he was able to find appellant on this back side road, thus adding to that appellant is trying to avoid law enforcement.
I don't know the record is reflecting that, but I mean, this was an expansion, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So don't you have to support that expansion with additional reasonable articulable suspicion?
Well, Your Honor, I think that he had gone off and continued to be evasive was an additional factor that added into the second encounter.
But at that point, I mean, the encounter had been terminated. So don't you think it's a little bit of an overstatement to say that he was continuing to be evasive? And certainly that's not something that the district court found, I don't think.
The state believes that the behavior, the driving behavior of leaving 371 and going out of the way to a dead end road on this, that the officer had to search around in order to find him, that was an additional evasive maneuver to stay away from the eyes of law enforcement. I'm just quickly looking over my notes to see if there was anything else that I felt important to address. At this time, unless there are additional questions, this would conclude my argument.
Nothing for me.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much. And Mr. Khan, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
You're muted, Mr. Khan.
I'm so sorry. Can you hear me? Thank you. I'll just start off with the point, very brief points. First one is the argument submitted by the state that Mr. LaPointe was evasive during the second seizure. Respectfully, there is nothing in the record supporting the state's position. Looking at the district court's order, 7-page order, nothing is highlighted from the district court submitting this argument. Officer Kled himself in his testimony during the suppression hearing said nothing about this. In fact, I think appellant would submit there is evidence to the contrary that this was not evasive conduct. Specifically, when Officer Klett approached Mr. LaPointe's vehicle, he observed the hood up and that the car was overheated. He noted this in his suppression hearing testimony. He also noted that when he asked Mr. LaPointe what's going on, Mr. LaPointe told him that his car is overheated. And you see in his body camera that Mr. LaPointe, in fact, has, if it's coolant, I'm not sure, but he has a liquid bottle in his hand that he is pouring as Officer Klett is speaking in and giving him directives that he's seizing him. So it's respectfully, that point from the state that this was evasive conduct is not supported in the record whatsoever. I also want to note that prior to that second seizure, when Officer Klett released Mr. LaPointe, it's important to note that Officer Collette didn't note anything of drug-related activity. He never believed that Mr. LaPointe was under the influence. He never stated or believed that Mr. LaPointe had anything on him or that there was anything in the vehicle that he could observe that was drug-related activity, such as seeing or smelling. And I think that's why Officer Collette released Mr. LaPointe from the scene. All he had at that moment was a hunch. He did a lot of expansions and nothing was established. And regarding Judge Sagel, the point about the intrusions, absolutely, in the second seizure, or any time you add, you need to have reasonable articulable suspicion anytime there's an incremental addition to a traffic stop. There's well-established
case. Mr. Khan, yeah, so if I could just ask you though, the officer sees the hood up and there's some problem with that, but so there's nothing wrong with the officer going up to him and asking him if he needs any help. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm assuming you're saying, I mean, that's what cops
do.
You're saying there's something wrong with him stopping and getting out of his car and just asking if he can help, if he needs anything, you out of gas, do you need a ride to the gas station? I mean, that part was okay, right?
That's correct,
Your
Honor.
Okay.
It's the appellant's position. That part is okay. Absolutely. Case law establishes that what's not okay and what was not legally justified is the additional steps that Officer Collette took, such as those demands, seizing Mr. LaPointe, ordering him to step away from the hood, ordering him to go to the driver's side of his vehicle, limiting his movement. When the canine arrived, then further limiting his movement by moving him away from the vehicle towards other officers where he's surrounded by officers, not allowed to go anywhere. That part is not okay. But absolutely, okay. Judge Sagel, you're right. Case law supports when the hood is up, an officer can definitely go ask, is everything okay? And that's not a seizure. It's those additional directives and actions that establish the seizure when it wasn't justified in this case.
And then is it your position that the officer needed a fresh slate in once he let him go other than saying, hey, do you need any help? Then anything beyond that, he couldn't rely on anything, any of his suspicions that he had from the prior stop.
That is correct, Your Honor. Case law says that the encounter was terminated. Officer Collette told him in the beginning, I'm not going to give you a ticket. And for that point, he stuck to his word. After all of that, he didn't give him a ticket. He released him, encounter terminated. And state law says when you're going to do, it's now a new seizure. When you're going to have that second seizure, you need to establish that reasonable, articulable suspicion of other criminal wrongdoing. And then for the canine, you need to establish that drug-related activity. I'm sorry, Judge Sagel.
I was just going to say, why don't you go ahead and sum up?
It really is just the points, like with the district court not applying the correct standard in this case when analyzing the canine sniff, specifically not applying whether there was reasonable articulable suspicion of drug-related activity. My time's up. May I just finish 10 more seconds?
Yes, please do.
And for all the points that we've established, appellant respectfully requests that this court vacate his conviction and reverse the district court. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for your arguments. They were very helpful to us. The case is now submitted and we will be issuing our decision within the statutory timeframe. And with that, that concludes.